You're listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
It's Happy Hour again.
All right.
Welcome to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis.
We're going to taste them first and then talk.
and we've got...
There will be some activity this evening.
There is some activity. I don't know who
is a functioning restaurant bar.
Who was that? Right,
that was Lumina.
Lumina
is bringing the free glasses.
Lumina, who is no stranger to this show, she's been on several times, mixing caipirinhas. However, badly I pronounce that.
I'm just gonna taste it. Pass down.
No, there we go. So, you know,
going down the list. It's viewers at home can't see this, but we're going.
And for the viewers, if you haven't noticed the informality of this show.
This will be edited for your pleasure.
Beer camp across the country. Beer camp across America.
So this is a really cool thing. We're honored to be one of the only two places in Ventura County that got the draft version of this. So that was really cool to have all 12 of them on at the same time. So beer camp, we were talking earlier briefly. That's the Pilsner there.
Yeah, the Firestone and Torpedo.
Which actually tastes like Pivo, but with New Zealand hops instead of German hops. It's really cool.
I like that.
Very tasty.
Yeah, I do. So, I'm sorry, I cut into the beer camp here. You were just going to tell us.
The beer camp, this is beer camp across America. So this is like beer camp for big kids. And the big kids being like the big breweries, right? The guys that they invited. I mean, there's some awesome names on here. You have Russian River, Ninkasi, Oscar Blues, Nuclearis, stuff that we don't get over
right
here.
I was going to say, that one that
Bells,
we can't get, Three Floyds.
And then the Asheville Brewers Alliance, which is probably something they were paying homage since they were opening a brewery there in Asheville. So probably something where they kind of threw them one there. That's kind of cool. That one's interesting. It's got sweet potatoes in it. It's called Tater Ridge.
Interesting. So, yeah, when you go down the list, too, just to jump right into some of the styles, it looks like they catered to these other breweries' style or theme a little bit in the collaboration.
Yeah, it definitely seems like they let them kind of do it. And so the beer camp, I think they knocked these out like right in a row. I guess they invited, must have been, you know, once a week or one every day or whatever it was, and knocked them all out, made the beers, and then they packaged them. They've got a 12-pack even where it's got two cans in it, which is really cool. So apparently... Ohio Beverage Company and BevMo have it.
Okay.
I got the Facebook official announcement this morning.
Two opposite sides of the
spectrum. I don't normally plug BevMo, but we have a lot of great customers that work at BevMo, and they sent us a message this morning. We've got 14 cases. That's it. Tell everybody.
Which is surprising for a big box that has leverage.
Very, very limited. This stuff's all very limited because it has to go all the way across the U.S., and there's a festival. The festival... It's actually right here behind us. That looks amazing. I wish I could go to this.
You see that great product placement Curtis has in the video? So we got this.
And the next one's in San Diego on the 20th, which is this weekend, right? Yeah.
Well, next weekend.
This weekend.
No, it is this weekend. Holy crap, I'm a week behind.
That's right.
And, I mean, so what they're doing is they're having all these beers there, but then they're also all those breweries are pouring. So it's like this. It's almost like, hey, Firestone, we've got a good little festival, too.
You're right.
It looks cool. And we're traveling 7 cities, so.
You know, to put out all of these, these brewers must have been coming in every other day.
That's
something.
Right. It has to be something like that.
But, you know, kudos to Sierra Nevada, where they have the tank space in order to say, let's do this. And, yeah, we don't have to worry about
It's cool.
Storage.
Yeah, or impeding upon our normal production.
Right. Which is very ambitious, considering that they're trying to open the other brewery, and they're trying to get that going. So, these guys are doing everything. And it must be cool to get to that point. I mean, they're 30-plus years in right now, right?
Yeah.
So it must be cool to get to that point where you can say, hey, I want to do this, like, collaboration thing with 12 beers across America and invite people, and like you said, have the space, the facility to do it. That's got to be nice when you can get to you look at some of these little breweries or smaller guys are opening up, looking up at these guys going, damn, that's pretty cool. I wish I could do that. You know, it's definitely a cool concept.
The next one we have coming up is the Nuclearis 3 and back. It's an English-style bitter.
Did we put 3 on there? Oh, misprint. There and back. No, it's there and back. I was like, three
and back, there and back.
I like 3 and back. What's the style? English-style bitter.
It is a bitter. Stop. So we'll see.
And going back while Joby's tasting on that one,
that's nice.
The Pilsner ESP. And the Belgian-style pale with Allagash. The Firestone had the Pilsner. Allagash gets the Belgian. Definitely more of a kind of grassier, you know, not a lot of fruit in there for me.
On the first one.
On the Pilsner, and then a little bit of, you know, that typical Belgian funk you get with the second one. But it kind of starting out in a dry spectrum.
Yeah, and this is definitely, this is kind of has Allagash's footprint on it. I mean, you can kind of, you can, in fact, both of these first ones. And I haven't had too much New Glarus. I don't know if this is something that's like right up their alley.
My experience with New Glarus is typically in the sour realm.
The sour realm, right.
Yeah, and those are my favorite, although they have a fantastic IPA, really great one.
I tell you, though, this is...
It's nice.
It isn't very nice.
Right. It's sessionable, 5.6.
Very pleasing, bitter finish.
I know you guys like the word sessionable. Yeah. You have a whole show about it.
Sessionables.
But that is sessionable. That's an English-style bitter. I mean, that's what it's for.
The thing that you want to look about, be careful about the ESVs too. So if you get one that has this kind of a caramel, buttery flavor, that's an off flavor with it. And so
the
diacetyl. No, this one does not. This one is very clean.
Yeah.
Red Hook's ESB had that for a while, and then that was kind of their house flavor, and they just kind of rolled with it. And then they had some new brewers come in, and they cleaned that one out, but.
So this is one for me where when I looked at it on paper, I said, come on, Russian River. Belgian-style blonde. But it's actually pretty good. Just because they're so known for Pliny sours. And I'm
hopefully that's not copyrighted.
I'm like, come on, man.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
On paper, I didn't want to like this beer. I was mad. But it's actually really good. Is there anything interesting about it?
You know, and I...
It's an American-Belgian mashup.
I'm having a hard time reading with the three and the there, and then I was reading Belgian style, and I was thinking golden.
Right.
You know, and so I was expecting something a little drier, a little more spice, and then I see that the blonde, obviously, yeah.
No, right. And it's kind of hoppy.
It is a little hoppy. It's got a crispness to it. I'm intrigued by the names.
The ESB over here.
I know, I was like hoarding it. I was intrigued by the names. I wish we had some of the brewers here to talk about that creation process. I mean, Ivan the Great.
I'll jump in on that one only because I already knew this, obviously. But it's their renowned Belgian brewer and friend, Ivan de Baetz, B-A-E-T-S.
Okay.
I did not know that. I just read it.
Because obviously
that's Ivan the Great. Ivan the Great.
This is our rudimentary teleprompter over here.
So there and back, that's... I have no idea why that's called. There and Back is named for the planes, trains, and zeal that connect the U.S. There you go. I don't make this stuff up. I'm reading it. What was that? Torpedo.
You couldn't make this stuff up.
Torpedo Pilsner, I think, is self-explanatory. They torpedoed it with the New Zealand hops. That's it. And what was the other?
The Myron's Walk.
The Myron's Walk honors Myron Avery, a founder of the Appalachian Trail, which spans our North Carolina brewery and Allagash's home in Maine.
So it definitely illustrates that they let the partner brewery kind of, like you said, handle the footprint and lay the foundation for each of the collaborations.
Now, Three Floyds, again, you look at it and you say, come on, Three Floyds, what do you got?
Chico King.
Chico King Pale Ale. But
awesome. My favorite from them is Alpha King. That is just, I got the, before I even knew who they were, I was at, there's a punk bar in Chicago called Delilah's. And they were having this big beer festival. I was meeting my best friend from high school, and I was looking through the paper, and I said, oh, here's a big beer, and we were in Kenosha. And so what do you want to do tonight? Oh, hey, look what I just saw in the paper. You want to go in? Yeah, we had no idea where this place was. Found it, and Alpha King was the first beer that I stayed with it. You know?
Alpha King is awesome.
And being an Indiana native, Three Floyds is, like, so sought after out here on the West Coast. You know, being able to see an Indiana brewery get so much notoriety out here. But they got quality beers. Alf King is it for you, but their Panzerwolf IPA is really nice, balanced. And the Gumball Head is a
Gumball
wheat beer.
Gumball Head is really good.
I mean, that's, especially because the shipments that come out here, you know, it takes a couple days to get here. The wheat holds up. If you can get yourself hands on Gumball Head.
I think my first Alf King was my first Dreadnought. Was an old one, and it did not do it justice.
And
it
most
just,
people typically
it was like a barley wine
to the Dark
at that point.
Lord, but they've got a solid lineup, I think.
Oh, yeah.
I like that. I know, Jason, you haven't tried it. I'm trying not to say it before you taste it. Sorry. But that was good. It says it's there for their mutual love of pale ales, which makes perfect sense. Sierra Nevada,
nice
kind of the king
style.
Of pales.
It's a well-balanced one, too. There's a nice malt flavor with that.
So what are we finishing with that?
Electric Ray.
That is not a very pale lager.
India Pale Lager. Yeah, well...
That's this one.
That is.
I feel like we're going to come up one short there, Joby.
Oh, you got
2, 4, 6. We've only got 11 beers in front of us, too. I was trying to work my way around the clock thinking, you know, because right now, if you haven't noticed on this broadcast and this recording, we are zooming through
Scottish Ale.
Because we want to be concise, but we want to enjoy these beers afterward as well. So we are just flying through the roundup. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm missing an hour in this clock.
All right, I'm going to go. This is going to be edited out.
No.
We need one full sample of
the Electric Ray.
Well, this is weird. This has to be the Scottish.
I think we could go.
That's not a very pale lager.
No.
I think we could go right to the.
Let's go.
I think we could go to the Scotch ale. Scottish ale.
Or Scottish. Go ahead. You start. We'll go this way.
All right. So for the second half of the.
We're going.
So you know the difference between the Scottish ale and the Scotch ale. Scottish ales are generally a little lower on the ABV. So think of it as a Scotch, as in the whiskey is a high proof sort of drink.
So this is a Scottish ale. So coming in at 7, it's actually lower than the Scotch ale.
It's saying, but 7 is a pretty high, high Scotch ale.
Especially when you get taxed based on alcohol, right? Like they do in the with that old way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got you. So Scotch ale stronger.
Right.
Scotch. But same style? Not same style, same basic
maltier
beer.
And, I'm trying to think of either one of them can have some subtle smoky flavors to it.
I'm torn.
But do you get sweet potato?
No, I don't really.
Which is something that I don't know how you would get anyways, because it probably just ferments out. Like, I don't know.
Like,
and who knows when they put it in.
When you're dropping it in.
Yeah.
No, that tastes like a Scottish ale to me.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
I'm actually kind of glad.
I'm torn on whether or not I like it because it's
malty.
Yeah, there's definitely malty sweetness there, but there's a white peppery bitterness in the finish that lingers a little bit for me.
Well, one of the things that I'm catching on the backside too is there's just a tiny bit of peat in here.
Right.
It's just kind of ever so faint, ghost-like, following at the end. Oscar Blues, of course, this is a can.
Really looking forward to this one.
There's two cans in the pack. This is one of them.
Can Fusion.
And that is go ahead, Jason. We'll just keep it going that way. That's a Reibach. So let's see here. Can Fusion is a dry-hopped Reibach. Spicy rye, tangy wheat, and bright citrus.
I like that. I typically enjoy Bach because there's just this kind of muddled sweetness that happens, but yet it doesn't leave you feeling like you're... It's not that malty... syrupy sweetness you're accustomed to.
And it's no light beer, 7.2.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, complex malt launches, did it say anything about hops?
Tangy it says wheat. There's a Australian Ella hop variety.
So and it's talking about tangy wheat and bright bitterness, or citrus, I mean. That's what I was smelling right away, was just that citrus. Yeah.
Part of why I like Bock's as well, because I think they're good food beer. When you look at across the spectrum, they've got some sweetness, they've got some of that bitterness, they've got a little hoppiness going on, so it can kind of work its way through the spectrum of food for you.
A lot of times the perceived bitterness on that, too, is just the alcohol cleansing. And so you get a spice in a Doppelbock. Actually helping to cleanse, because there's hardly any hops in it anyway, and that alcohol is so high that the alcohol is actually playing a part, too, is actually playing a role in cleansing that out. Let's see, Yonderbach.
The most mispronounced, the Maybach. Not to be confused with car. No.
I think
the car is different.
Is it Maybach for the car?
I think so. Ah, that looks more like it. Thank you very much.
That would be, I'm not sure, I don't know the Maybach
that
car.
That definitely smells like a hoppy lager. But basically it literally means May, right? Like the month of May. This is a beer that would come out in the spring and to celebrate.
Generally a little lighter so that as you're working, it's not as
generally it wouldn't be 7.7%?
No.
No. And in terms of tropical notes, I think most people...
Well, they made it like that, right?
Yeah, but I think a lot of people think when you say tropical, you're like pineapple and citrus and coconut. This is more like that richer papaya passion fruit realm for me.
Right. Yeah, my box is generally a light in a little hoppier than what you would normally get.
Of course, being that this is Beer Camp across America, we can do 7.7.
Because we know America.
Tropical my box.
America. We're doing this. We're making it our own my box.
So do you want
to? No, I really like.
I think we should go back to that.
Let's do it.
It's perfect timing with these dark ones right here. So this is Ballast Point, Electric Ray. pays homage to our hop torpedo. Oh, so going back to the using the hop torpedo at Sierra again.
Oh, this is some dank.
And this is dank and hot. This is high voltage too. 8.5.
I'll reserve, but
70 IBUs.
I don't know if I've ever eaten weed, but I would imagine that that's what it tastes like.
Yeah, but
I will not answer that. I will not confirm nor deny that.
I'm pleasantly surprised by that, though.
Oh man,
like
that is
this that marries is. That beautiful summertime lager that you want to drink after mowing the lawn with an IPA concept that we enjoy usually in the evenings.
It does not finish like a lager, though.
No, it's not.
I was waiting for that kind of, you know, that lager kind of.
No,
it was like nope.
It's kind of like those NBA jerseys.
Here's some weed for you.
Like the house divided really kind of sports jerseys where one side blends into the other. It's two different universities.
And, I mean, two breweries that make really good hoppy beers. So Ballast Point, the Sculpin, and all the
I have to say
Dorado
though,
and all the.
They didn't let Ballast Point throw any peppers or.
Yeah, you know, actually, I was. Right. It's funny. I was looking for that when we got this. I was like, all right, let's see what they did. You know, did they throw any of their stuff? But they didn't. So what do we got next, Chris? Since you kind of have a year in
well,
the
we've got
there.
The
Dark Ale.
The Mallards.
Mallards.
Odyssey.
Rich, dark, and
doing
roasty.
Bell's out of Michigan.
It's, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, we typically have good luck with Bell's, and in terms of one of those brands that people know and kind of recognize right off the shelf, the yellow Bell's sign is prominent.
So do you guys know what a Maillard or
so the Maillard effect?
Reaction, yeah.
Okay. So right. Yeah, that's just the toasting. So toasting. It, whether it's meat or it's grains, it's caramelizing sugars and the sweetness you get.
And it's a 8.5% Imperial Dark Ale.
I'm glad they didn't say Black IPA.
Speaking of which, did you see the National Homebrew Competition was a couple weeks ago, a month ago or so probably. And they came out with the new BJCP guidelines. Did you see them?
Is there a Black IPA?
So, no, it was double IPA. So they've narrowed it down to two categories now. Double IPA and not, or no, it was Black IPA and not Black IPA. And that's what.
Not Black IPA. So if I gave this to you, I said close your eyes. Would you say Imperial Dark Ale or would you say Imperial Stout?
Oh, I think I'd go with the stout. Right. There's
is
some
there a difference. There's between Imperial Dark Ale and Imperial Stout. I mean,
so this is just saying an Imperial Black Ale. That's what
dark
they're
ale.
Talking, dark ale.
But 40 IBUs, so not as an Imperial Stout could be way higher than that. Like Old Rasputin is like 90 IBUs.
I think it's missing some of that typical mouthfeel and creaminess, but definitely in terms of flavor profile, it's up there with the
super
Imperial
roasty.
Stouts.
Right, the roastiness.
Yeah,
is,
and then in fact it says it in the first line: rich, dark, and roasty. So
mm-hmm.
Pretty cool.
Right. Let's see, the Alt Root, which is an alt beer. That's the next one. Victory Brewing Company.
This might be a good little
and
cleanser
Victory
after that.
Is Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yep.
And this is a style we don't typically see.
Yeah, the alt.
You know, we're lucky enough to have Ennegrin just down the road from us. And they brew an alt beer. And, you know, a lot of nice malty flavors generally. I don't think theirs is 6%, though.
This is 6.6 with 50 IBUs, so. I would say it's hoppy for alt. I don't think a German alt is going to be anywhere near that IBU, right?
No. I mean, the alt is just old. It means old in German. And so there wouldn't have been that much hops in it. There would have been more of the malty lager flavors to it. And the alts were this sort of in between when there were still breweries that couldn't brew lagers, but they could brew a cold ale. And so this has that clean and crisp sort of character of a lager, but it's still this really big malty.
Kind of disappears for me. Like you like taste it, and then and maybe it's supposed to do that. But
well, I'm glad you said that because in my mind I was thinking, what could I like the idea of it, but what could make it better? And I think it could benefit from a cask pour. Let it warm up a little bit. Let some of that those richer caramely malty notes you're talking about, Curtis, come through. And I think it would give it a creamier mouthfeel and head.
Yeah.
Is that a typical color for all?
Yeah.
It's an old beer, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, those are, I'm just trying to think, trying to pull out all the specifics that I've read at some point that are escaping me now. But
I'm sure it was on your Cicerone test.
it's, you know, this is, I think 50 IBUs is probably on the elevated range of that, but
it makes sense for what's going on. I mean, it says Alt-Root is a tribute to the stubborn spirit that drove us to dodge the status quo and build breweries of our own. So really, they didn't really have anything, so they just kind of made up something.
Well, but you look at
always the eternal optimist.
You look at Pilsner's.
I mean, really, it's the only one that really didn't have a description of the beer. So
well, you look at Pilsner's and coming out of Germany. You know, those are crisp and hoppy beers, but those are only coming in at 25 to 30 IBUs, and
right.
So this one needs the elevated IBUs just to kind of cut that down, cut
right.
the malt flavor.
Right.
So you said you off camera have a little familiarity with this one. Finish it strong with the last beer.
This is a perfect finisher too. It's more like a breakfast beer, but
Ninkasi's Double Latte Coffee Milk Stout.
7.6 milk stout.
And just based on our show with Pints and Pairings platform the other day, Curtis. I think we're starting to see more of these multi-layered stouts, a coffee milk stout,
right.
an oatmeal milk
peanut
stout,
butter,
a
milk
peanut
stout.
Yeah, where there it's not just one variable on the stout option, it's a two or three variable.
Well, people love the silky mouthfeel of lactose, and so as soon as you put that in, any of those roasty flavors that they used in these,
right.
all of a sudden gets rounded and smooth and just this really dark chocolate flavor.
What stands out to me is, it's 7.6, but I don't get that on the mouthfeel. Is that part of the lactose?
Oh, yeah,
because
it's just coating your mouth.
Because to me, if I see 7.6, I'll think, oh, it's probably going to feel a little stronger in my mouth, but it actually feels like kind of light. At first, it's roasty, and then it's kind of like silky, and then it's...
And I think this is a beer destined for nitro as well.
And nitro would be awesome on this. Oh, yeah.
It would really enhance that latte perception. When people read the word latte, they want to gravitate towards an actual latte, some creaminess and
right.
a little bit of the extra milky mouthfeel.
Right, and there's a ton of coffee in this. You can taste it. I mean,
The Buzz beer.
I love coffee
whenever,
and beers.
Whenever I hear coffee beers, it always makes me think of the Drew Carey show, because that's what their thing.
Buzz beer.
Yeah. You know, the other day, Joey, we tasted through like four or five coffee beers, and I had a friend who came out to support the show. He told me, the next day when we were running, he's like, dude, I was up all night. I was like, you won't believe how much coffee was actually in those beers.
Is your friend one of those, like, I can't drink coffee past 12 o'clock?
Yeah, typically. Yeah, he said he was wired to like 2
or
3 in the morning.
Well, I guess it was the afternoon when we did that.
Yeah, we didn't even start the
right.
show until 1. But, like, and you, to your point about really tasting the coffee, depending on how they're adding the coffee, whether it's early on as a grind or if it's later on as a bean and trying, I mean, there's a different... interpretations.
It's yeah,
and each one of them,
and they all make a difference, right?
Yeah, they all make a difference.
Right.
Well, I'm guessing that his sleep deprivation was probably from that coffee that he had right before.
Oh,
he
it was
sat
a monster.
Down.
Yeah, it was a big boy.
So he had coffee and then coffee beer.
Exactly.
And then coffee beer. So I don't know, but
this again,
I like
this is a nice balanced coffee beer, and
yeah.
I think nitro would really just make that shine.
And I see what Curtis is saying with the milk, and so it's a healthy dose of milk sugar. So it's kind of
The lactose.
The lactose.
Curtis, can you talk
well, you
about
want to be careful with, and if you're lactose intolerant too, that's lactose that's in there.
In the
and so it's not, it is not going to do your tummy any good if you drink
so
it.
So
we
got to
talk
most
about,
right.
Curtis, what are the different ways you can introduce a lactose component or a milk aspect to a stout?
Well, you know, we've talked, we talked about it with some of the Sierra Nevada beers where you were telling me that they add oats. It's kind of like
Lagunitas. I mean, they add tons of oats. Yeah,
add oats, and so oats gives. Some people think that it has kind of an oily texture. I don't think.
Mouthfeel,
but
right?
It's, and if that means, if oily means silky to them, you know, if those are, then I certainly agree with that. That you add flaked oats and just oatmeal. I mean, you just toss it in. When I do a beer, I always add the oats. I always add oats in, and it's just oatmeal. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
You get because
can you actually add like a milk or a cream or anything to a beer though, or is that gonna ruin your?
Oh, no,
work?
Yeah. Don't if you
should make like a cereal beer or something.
Well,
only
like
about
oats and
the milk aspect. I mean, if people think it's a milk stout, do they actually add milk? You mentioned lactose sugar, but other would there?
Do they actually add milk at one point?
Well,
I mean,
at some point they may have, but it would. That would have to be added into the boil where you're going to end up pasteurizing everything, killing all the germs. Because if you added that in, then all of a sudden you've got this bacteria-laden drink in your beer, which
sour
is,
milk beer,
which is yeah, it's not going.
I don't think that's a style that.
No,
it's not the right kind of sour.
No,
that
we and that it is it going to curdle once you pour it and put it into the beer. So that's why I mean.
Scratch that. Everyone watching this, forget I asked the question.
But I think it's at some point.
They probably did add milk.
Yeah, I mean. Who thinks to evaporate milk? What you know, and then add in the dry ingredients or the lactose, whatever's left, the lactose sugar. I don't know where that came from. I think it's a fabulous research opportunity.
I think it's just like food, right? Everything was sort of just done.
We need to do
you know and just try it out.
We need to find a brewery that wants to come in and talk only about their milk stout. And
right.
Then
we need to find someone who's doing like an old milk stout, like an old style milk stout. And I wonder if. Like, the guidelines are so loose that you can just, like, say it's a milk stout when it has...
Because it elicits the feeling?
Right.
Or the...
I don't know. Because I've looked up, like, there's been milk stouts I've had, and I've looked it up, and there's no lactose. There's no milk.
So if it feels creamy, like milk was added, you think it's a milk stout?
I'm surprised that they could do that, given TTB regulations, that if you said that you could... If you said milk on it, that you couldn't... That you'd be able to brew it without that in.
Maybe I'm thinking cream stout?
Cream,
because so that's kind of vague.
So the Sam Adams had a cream stout.
Yeah, Boston cream or no, not Boston cream.
Boston cream.
Boston
cream. Awesome, like, you want to do a Boston cream inspired.
Sam Adams cream stout. You're right.
Cream stout. And so, but that was, I think, the reason that they called that one cream was just because it was lactose. But that was a really great beer because it had all these stouty flavors, and I had that early on in my craft beer. Growth, and I remember enjoying that one so much because it didn't have all of the acrid sort of really roasty flavors.
Was that around the same time as the cherry wheat? Sam Adams.
You know,
that beer swore me off any kind of fruit flavored beer.
Really?
Yeah. I think you can still get the milk stout or the cream stout.
Did you enjoy the cherry wheat?
Hey, thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Joe and Chris. If you like this podcast, make sure you like us on iTunes.
There were people that sought out the
You can also find us on Facebook under Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Give us a like and share it with all your friends. We'd appreciate it. Cheers.
You like that mix pack? Yeah, it's cool.
And he grabbed that up. And that was a beer, like a unique beer.
It was
super
unique.
We both enjoyed together because I'm elevated in my beer experiences compared to him. But yeah, we felt like there was common ground on that beer.
I'll be honest. I'd like to go back and try a cherry wheat now. I don't know. It's hard to get it now. I think it's only in Boston probably or something. But I propose a show where we try all these old beers like Mendocino and Sam Adams, Boston Lager, and maybe Blind even.
You know, Boston.
Be kind of fun. Just wrap them up.
I don't know. Last time we did a Blind challenge, I was embarrassed. So
Boston, it might be fun to try Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Right.
Just old school like standards that were like in their time were like
I've been hounded
Stone
by
Aaron Bassett
family to do a PBR show. I don't know if that matters, but
all right. I just think it might be fun to go back to the classics, kind of revisit them. And one for me was Mendocino White Hawk.
Okay.
IPA, which at that time when I drank it, I thought it was like, man, this is crazy hoppy. And by today's standards, it's probably so pale compared to all these other ones. But
now, Curtis,
I digress.
That's all right. Curtis, going through this list, because you mentioned IPA, Joby, and IPA, especially out here on the West Coast, is really like a prominent style. You can't go too far without being a hophead.
Right.
You know. Just to throw you a little plug there.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
thank you.
That's
what is your
said.
Interpretation of kind of the hop spectrum on this flight as a dozen? Because we're talking about it being across America, right? So there's a whole diversified market that this needs to appeal to. Do you feel like, Curtis, that it really fits in with a balanced flight or a balanced 12-pack?
I think it's certainly a balanced, balanced flight, a balanced 12-pack. I think I would have liked to have seen a little more hop-forward beers, but...
But that might have completely thrown off the whole thing.
But
that's not the idea
here, you know. And so, coming from the hoppy, the Chico King, and then the India Pale Lager.
Lager was good. Even the Russian River Blonde was hoppy.
Well, and then there's plenty of hops.
What is really sad about it is there's no double IPA.
There's nothing. And when you open this, I think anybody who opens this is going to be like, or gets their 12-pack is going to be like, oh, I didn't even, this is not what I thought. In a good way, pleasantly surprised. Because some of these names you would have said, oh, yeah, it's going to be all double IPAs or IPAs, you know, and that's what you would want. So I have a bonus beer for you guys, which I didn't even know I was going to have, but Scott brought over.
See, so this your is staff knows you better than you know you.
This is a cask of Epic Brewing Hopulent with, and I always, there's two ways to pronounce it, guava or guayava if you're Latino. the smell is ridiculous. It's got guayava juice that they've thrown into the cask. I haven't tasted it yet. I've just smelled it. I know we all have different opinions of fruit beers and putting fruit in your cask.
As a primary host of the show, I'm supposed to be a shadow tonight. And we see how well that worked out.
Just looking at Curtis's face. Cask beer, so they've thrown it in the cask with a few extra hops, too.
Wow. What's the base beer?
It's their Hopulent Double IPA. It's like an 8-point-something%.
What's really I enjoy the beer. Let me say that right up.
It's borderline it's just about to get too much of the flavor, but I like it.
What it reminds me of, what's really interesting is I just had the Institution Ales. Okay, so we did our show Saturday. I stopped there. I tasted their coffee-infused IPA on the way back, only on cask. The IPA had that same sort of flavor, so whatever the hops are that they're using in that. And then at Ladyface, I had their Imperial IPA just a couple days ago. The same hop flavor. I need to know
so
what
is
that
this,
is.
We're getting, or is it the flavor on the?
Well,
hop?
The hop flavor is this.
I want to say the
herbal
Zythos.
It's some sort
of. I think on the cask it said guava juice and Zythos.
It's a popular hop being used, but there's this tobacco-y herbal sort of hop flavor.
It's interesting that you said tobacco-y. I was struggling to figure out the description. And what's nice about this beer, because I do enjoy the beer as well.
That's interesting.
The guava is really subdued, but it's in there.
It's there.
Especially at this temperature. It reminds
me the temperature
me like
and the lack of carbonation really helps it.
Yeah.
This was super carbonated.
It reminds me kind of like guava juice out of the carton a little bit, just in terms of mouthfeel and that little underlying sweetness. Mm-hmm. But yet, as you said, there's a tobacco-y, hoppy punch.
Oh, that's nice.
Something interesting. That's what's fun about casks. They can just throw stuff
like
in the cask.
It doesn't matter.
We'll send it out to market. If they don't like it, who cares? What are they going to do?
Because what is your cask? Is that a 7-gallon cask?
No, that's a 10.2.
Like you can you just blame it on the lower or the higher temperature and the lack of carbonation. I don't like it because it's not carbonated.
Like you just don't understand this beer because it's cask.
Well, so we have a few.
You're just not ready for the cask.
Now,
part of this beer.
A cask purist would probably want to kill them for throwing juice.
Oh, yeah. You have a regular that would not.
Name to be unmentioned, but yes, you know someone. We both know someone who would just.
Are we talking cask or real ale?
No. Well, we're talking anything in cask. They want hops in it. They're fine with that, but don't throw anything else in it. Don't put ghost pepper. Don't put vanilla bean.
Well, I don't think you should ever put a ghost pepper in anything. But
I tried to get him to eat one time. Didn't go well.
They don't want anything. They want no. They want no cocoa, no vanilla bean, no nothing. And I'm saying, well, what's the fun in that?
Right.
I mean, the whole point is to experiment.
And again, going back to, earlier in this broadcast when we were talking about cask for a couple of the beers, I think increasing the temperature and reducing the carbonation can allow some flavors and ingredients to really shine in a way that if you carbonate it and it's crisp, it's not going to be forward.
Now, on the flip side, I've had cask beer where I've said, this needs some bubbles. Like, there was one that was like a barrel age. I think it was a stone or something. And the beer was like, you could tell it would have been really good, even with some like fine Belgian like yeast. Like it almost needed that like super carbonation, and you're like, oh, this would be really good if it was carbonated. Mm-hmm. So it's funny sometimes you'll have a cask beer like, ah man, wish it was carbonated. Yeah,
velvety.
too flat. I don't know what's the right word, but because some of the carbonation does a lot. It's amazing how much it does. Mm-hmm. And then like when you learn about beer or when you brew and you're like, oh, I have to pick how much carbonation goes in the beer.
Right.
And it's kind of like, and it all makes a difference. It's just all part of what goes into making the beer.
When you were talking about these cask purists, it reminded me of an article that I just read in Beer Advocate, and it was talking about session ales and what's wrong with sessions. And one of them is my favorite. The Ahlstrom's brothers, I can't remember which one wrote this one, was dead on with whatever 6 points he had about it. My favorite one, though, which kind of leads back to the cask ale, is that when you're telling people that they don't get it, right? So the session people, the session beer people, are all pissed off at all the rest of the world for loving high alcohol and hoppy beers, because you just don't understand session beers. You are not a qualified beer drinker to enjoy the session ales. And so that was kind of the same thing with the cask.
The cask people are like that, yes.
You can't do anything to a cask. You don't understand what it's supposed to be. Yeah, I understand. I just want to drink a beer and have some fun with it. And that's what I love about all of our local places, that they're starting to, and especially institution, where they'll throw just these little things in there, here and there.
Of wacky stuff in
there. And the cask is gone. And the best way that it happens, too, is that these 4 gallon, 5 gallon kegs that they do are gone in 2 or 3 hours. Yeah. I mean, they're boom, because people go in.
Consumers love a mystery. They love to try something new just because it's available.
That's the whole point of it, yeah. Right. I mean, by the way, just rewinding for a second, where are these session purists? I've never met these people.
Oh, no. We
met a few.
I have not met any. In fact, I cannot sell session IP.
Right. I think, just to clarify, if I interpret you correctly, Curtis, session purist is not someone that only drinks sessions, but when it comes to the definition of
they don't only drink sessions. I thought they were going around it's a lifestyle, bro.
It's kind of like the hipster lifestyle. I mean, it's all these hipsters that are drinking session beers.
Anything above 5%, baby.
Anything above 5%, I'm out.
Well, and that was the other thing. Is what's the range? Some people say it's below 4, some that say it's all of the things that we've all talked about before, but It's a little bit of both, but it's certainly the people who want to go in and be able to drink 4% beers. But it's kind of like hybrid drivers, and I'm one of them, looking around at all these giant cars driving on and go, yeah, you know,
what, that head move?
Wait,
who's looking at who? You're looking at them, or they're looking at you?
Yeah, I'm looking at them. The South Park one, did you see that, where the smug was coming across the country? Not smog, it was the smug. Because Stan's dad had bought a Prius, and he was like, oh, yeah, you shouldn't be driving this. This is my electric car. It's that same kind of thing. Like, they're just smug and snooty about, I'm a better drinker than you. I understand what's going on.
If I was going to open a brewery, I would probably cater to these session, you know, if there's enough of them out there, brewery, man.
So mainly the volume sales.
Well, yeah, I know. They're going to, well, see, this
well, it's all about volume, right? So
another point that they made was that people are paying the same amount for a session beer as they are for the 10% beer, or you know, in the same neighborhood.
Not here.
So you could sell two
session beers instead of one strong beer.
Right, and so they're going to be sitting there all night drinking the same price beer for half the price of
it's called session.
Right, session.
So,
message.
What's the name of the brewery up in Oregon that Full Sail? Remember Full Sail?
Sure.
They had one of the first ones that was actually just called session. And then at first, we were like, when we first got there, and it was a 12-pack, and in fact, there were stubbies. They weren't even 12 ounces.
Yeah.
Stubbies. And it was like a stubby 12-pack, and we got it, and people were like, this is like 8 years ago. They're like, what is this 12-pack? It's like, it's a session. And then I remember I actually looked up, and you guys talked about the origin of the word. And then we were like, look, it's if you want to drink a lot of beers, here's your 12-pack. And they're like,
one session.
That sounds awesome.
It's such an ambiguous definition.
Well, yeah. Session could be...
It's cheaper.
Hours.
It's cheaper, and
for hours.
And it's an all malt beer, and it tastes better than Budweiser or Miller.
It was. It was a good. They had a dark.
A lot of people's opinion.
They even had a dark.
In terms of my interpretation, I think that's a good point, because I was sitting there thinking about where would my range be when you mentioned what is the range of a session beer, and I'm thinking anything under a big three, kind of typical
macro
offering.
Whatever, yeah.
But with a lot more flavor.
Right.
Okay. I mean, I was golfing on Monday. We were in a golf tournament. And Firestone, and they had Easy Jack on the trailer, and that's what I drank during my golf game. And yes, that's a session IPA or whatever. But to me, it was just, hey, I don't want to get hammered out here.
But you wanted good flavor.
But I wanted flavor, right. And I didn't want 805. Mm-hmm. No offense, 805, love you. And I didn't want people.
Love you, love you.
Or I didn't really want people pills. It was more like I wanted some hops. So
sure.
In that case, it worked. But yes, it does to me and to a lot of the hop heads. It does lack a certain body, and it's going to, because it's low alcohol.
Bundling all these things we're throwing out there, though, and looking down this list that we just tasted, as a tap house that's serving this flight, 2-6 beer flights, how much education goes into it? Like, with style-wise, not many people, I imagine, have Maybach exposure or all beer exposure How do you manage that when you bring it to the customer and say, hey, this is our flight that's being offered tonight, and they start asking questions or they have inquiry like a Reibach. What does Reibach mean? What's the educational component of this flight?
Well, I think the flight, we tried to break it up into sort of a Bach, you know, darker kind of more. To me, the first one is like, yeah, I know all these styles. And the second flight, to me, is more like ask some questions and talk about it. And the second one will be more conversation. But you bring up a great point. I don't think that the average consumer or, you know, admittedly, even some of our staff would know what some of these styles are, just because it's not something that you see all the time. But, yeah, that's where we come in. I'm going to be happy to walk around. Curtis, you're leaving, but Jason's going to stay around and just chat with people and see, like, hey, what did you think? Or do you know what this style is? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people don't know. And the German, in the whole, like, spectrum of, you know, I think sometimes we forget how international beer is, and we kind of think it's only America and, like, our styles that we make and like.
No.
I mean, even our list is kind of, we've been talking about, even our list has kind of gone that way, and now we want to kind of go, like, hey, we need to do some more international, not just Belgium, you know. But my point I was trying to make was German styles, English style, I mean, for sure English style is a lot. I mean, no one cares about English style here except for
it's
people
the malty.
From yeah. England. Yeah, right. It's the malty. And the German is that clean, the pure, the thing, and beautiful. I love German beers. But unrepresented in the U.S., I think. And I know there's a few breweries who've opened and tried to make only German style. There's a brewery just opened in Van Nuys. It's like McLeod's. Cask only and English style. So it'll be interesting
That's
to see.
It's a niche market, though.
It's very niche market. It's not something that people come in here asking for. Like, hey, what's your best English beer you guys
Can
have?
Can I get a bitter?
Can I get
yeah,
a
right. Yeah,
Can no. I get a two shilling or, a, you know, or whatever? Right. You know? So just food for thought is, are we going to see that come up? Or I kind of want that to be kind of our mission. It's like, yeah, that's cool. We have been there and done that with the IPAs. We've IPA'd it to death and hopped it. And I love it, and I'll still drink IPAs. But should we explore some of these styles?
I think, Curtis, you and I would show up for something like that. If you were to take an English night, you know, lately you've been kind of mixing lights instead of doing a specific brew, you've been doing different styles. But maybe go in the direction of a themed flight.
I like that.
Style.
I think that's great.
Especially if you were to get a discount, if you wore knickers, say.
Or if you
rode in on one of those bicycles with that really big ass front wheel and that little tiny one.
Thankfully, Curtis, you have leader
roles.
I will accept horse and carriage also. Horse and carriage will be.
Or maybe doing a line dance with other people in
the jig, right?
You know, Curtis, you like to put together stuff in your not just your outfits, but in, you know, with Hop headset, and it might be something interesting to explore. I mean, we definitely could talk about that. But I don't know. I think people just don't know enough about beer styles. I think they say, "Hell yeah, man, awesome beer!" But then you're like, "Well, what's that? What is that?" And it's mm-hmm. like, "I don't know. It's awesome beer."
I think what we've seen too with the measuring in terms of beers. Like the measuring.
Yeah, I like that.
Of beers and acquiring beers from across the country.
The Dungeons and Dragons effect. The D&D effect.
Yeah, and they would poo-poo a flight like that because they're saying, what's the value in it? Why?
Right.
It's not the biggest, boldest, greatest thing.
Right.
But based on some of the discussions we've had, a return to style is very valuable. Having a discussion about the roots of these beers before you start adding all kinds of crazy fruit or hops or chocolate or whatever it may be. Is actually a really beneficial way to go.
And there are definitely guys out there like Chuck that we did the North Coast with. I mean, Chuck teaches like a beer course, and one of his chapters is, you know, Germany and German styles. And he did a class here, and he brings out, I mean, it's an amazing spread that he brings out. But he takes you through all the German styles and why and how.
None of them have any crazy fruit added.
No.
Wild yeast. And
there are the exceptions, the Goza. With the,
they,
you know,
they weren't allowed
few,
to.
They've got a few cheater ones.
Yeah.
That you're like, wait a minute, what about the purity law? It's like, oh, that one got around it.
I'm sorry, this one is not called beer. That's not technically classified as a beer.
But
I mean, you can get around it. You just don't get to call it beer.
Malt beverage.
Malt beverages, whatever.
Cool,
it
45.
Right.
No. Well, I guess more exciting or non-exciting flight nights coming up. Depends how you look at it. More educational. that was Curtis's box.
No, it's Jason trying to put his foot in his glass.
I was washing my shoes, apparently, by putting my foot in my water glass.
But I hope you guys enjoyed it.
It was definitely.
Cool little thing they did.
It's always good to come back. What I appreciate about this too is that they hit these styles that we've been talking about that are a little less well known.
Right.
But they've given them enough kick so that people will pay attention to them because
Americanized them.
Right. Because in my box, it's really. I mean, we're talking
the first step
lower.
Is having the conversation, right?
Right. Getting there. And I think that once people, you know, if they're interested, I like the my box, and they start searching out my box, you're going to find a wide range, first of all, of colors and flavors and strengths, certainly. But at least it's opened you up to that. And by including it in a Sierra Nevada pack, people know that they're going to get a good beer anyway.
That's cool. I think they were all equally, of course, some better than others, right, Jason? But it's a very fun pack. I think it's cool. Pick it up while you can, I guess, because there's not that many of them out there. But take it home.
Yeah, we're in their backyard, and we only got 14 cases.
Well, we got a draft.
Bitter IPA is ready, Bitter Party 1.
It's called Beer Cap Across America.
I was going to say, what, there's only a million and some people in Ventura County, and we only got 14 boxes
it's
here?
Not, it's not Beer Cap Across California, Curtis. It's got to make it all the way across the U.S.
The next time I see a photo of you, like, in the backyard with a barbecue, the owner or head brewer of Sierra Nevada, I'll have a different interpretation, but until then, we're just general consumers.
Yeah, that's right. All right, well, I think that's a good spot to end right there.
Sounds good. I got schooled right there at the very end. It's time to call it quits before I get another tongue lashing.
Yep. All right, well, it's been another a mini episode.
You know what? We were just,
not very mini.
We were shooting for a half hour. We just about made it the happy hour.
That's perfect.
That it's supposed to be. All right.
All right. We'll see you guys soon. Jason, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, as always, for letting me sit in.
Thanks for interrupting your vacation to be here with us.
This is a vacation in itself.
I think you needed a break.
This is work. What?
No one's going to see this. Don't worry.
No. Nobody's watching us right now.
My father-in-law never watches the playback.
Never.
Edit that out later, Curtis.
All right.
Thanks, Curtis.
Cheers.
Have fun.
Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. If you like this podcast, make sure you like us on iTunes. You can also find us on Facebook under Happy Hour with Joby and Curtis. Give us a like and share it with all your friends. We'd appreciate it. Cheers!